You're listening to the Nerd to Know Media Network. Join us at nerdtoknowmedia.com.
Broadcasting from the Blanchistan Center, this is Phoenix FM.
The internet is a communications tool used the world over where people can come together to pitch bad movies.
According to the Nerd Index, you should be upside down in a junior high toilet around the clock.
This is
Tag is in,
tag is out. Never miscommunication.
It's over 9,000.
My name is Foxy.
The balls are in there.
Hello everybody, welcome to Phoenix 92.5 FM, Nerd to Know Media, and wherever else you are listening to this show. My name is Dara O'Connor, you are listening to Nerd to Know Media's Nerd to Know Basis. Of course, this is our panel show, live from KazookuCon on the 13th of April 2024. Thank you so much for everybody who was there, everybody who is listening to us now, and thank you to KazookuCon and the organisers of it. Look, I love KazookuCon. It's my favourite panel. It's my favourite con. It's great, always a great group of people. It is in Cork, so it's a bit of a travel, but it's always worth it. They always made us feel very, very welcome. I've always had a really good time there. And it's the smaller cons, I think, are where it's at. If you've never been to a con before, and you know DCC is kind of overwhelming, which it can be, to be very fair. The smaller cons are where it's at. They're usually run by students or some kind of group that put a lot more specialization into what's there. You know, you won't have the big traders, you won't have that, but you will have like really cool panels, really unique guests, and also smaller traders that like cater specifically for the kind of con that it is. This was an anime and sci-fi con, so a lot of anime, a lot of sci-fi stuff, and it was an awful lot of fun. And I think if you go there, you can have a very different experience to something like a DCC or an MCM. Don't get me wrong, I love DCC, love MCM, but they are very, very different experiences, and I would recommend going to them all. Every con is fun, every con has something different to offer, and it's like we love doing them, we love doing these panels, but personally it's always a privilege to do KazookuCon. This was our second time doing it. First time was during the pandemic, so it was a lot better to actually do a panel in front of people for KazookuCon rather than digitally. So thank you so much for having us there, and everyone involved was phenomenally cool to deal with, and we had a great time. We weren't expecting such a big crowd at 12 o'clock on a Saturday, but thank you to everybody that showed up. If this is your first time checking us out from the panel, you're welcome. We genuinely appreciate you being here. If you're checking this out on the internet, thank you so much as well. We tried to get the best audio we could. It wasn't as good as I would like it to be, but you know, you can still get most of it there as well. We will try to improve that going forward. Again, technical issues kind of are with the air, so we're trying to, you know, get this more podcast radio sounding. But we still have the audio. It's still there. It's pretty good quality, and we hope you enjoy it. So the main topic of this was probably not surprising for anybody who was listening. We've done about three shows on Madam Web. I've seen it about six times, and I just had to talk about it. So I was joined by Kev, and joined by guest host Keith Smith from Horrenda, who has worked with us in the past, still does. So it was great to have him on the show and part of the panel. So thanks so much, guys, for making the trip down. And look, the plan going forward is to do more of these panels. So we have one coming up now in the near future, which we can't announce just yet, but it was confirmed over the weekend at KazookuCon. So that was kind of cool. And If there's anything you want us to cover, nerdtoknowmedia@gmail.com is the best way to reach out to us, or social media. We're on Instagram. We're also on Facebook. And we will be back next week. obviously with our normal shows, there's another show going up, which isn't on the feed just yet, so that's going up after this. And enjoy our Madam Web panel, because it's it is unbelievable how wild that movie actually is. So I've been Dara Connor. For everybody else on the panel and on Earth to Know Media, we'll talk to you on the next show. Enjoy Madam Web.
That and the ones where they promise what's in the movie and it's not.
It's all dream sequences.
Yeah.
So yeah, like this movie starts off with, let's play the clip. We're going to play a first clip, right? So it starts off in the Amazon. And here's just a taste of what we're given.
Do you think we're close?
They're almost impossible to find. No.
I haven't edited this, by the way. This is how it sounds.
Do you think we're close?
They're almost impossible to find. No one's ever captured one alive.
I agreed to provide security for you because I thought we were close to finding the spider.
Will it be worth the wait? Dead specimens show that the peptides in the spider's venom, and basically they supercharge their cellular structure.
That spider can give superhuman strength and power like Las Arañas.
Las Arañas? The mythical spider people who run across the treetops and punish evil men with their black poison and such? I like to base my research in science, not legends, Mr. Sims.
Those spiders are wasted here.
These little spiders have the potential to cure hundreds of diseases.
Okay, so that's 2 minutes into the movie. That's about as much setup as you get, right? So the movie starts off, there's two random people, a heavily pregnant woman, by the way, and she's ready to pop. And she's just
deep in the Amazon.
Deep in the Amazon. So that's never really explained why she's there. They do touch on it later on, but there's no setup. So she's there, and
it's a crash course in hardball exposition.
Yeah.
In that nobody actually talks like that. There's no natural dialogue here. Everything here is to establish the point of the movie.
So look.
Like right, a brick to the face.
So there are ways to do exposition. For example, there's a bit in Lord of the Rings where Sauron and Saruman are talking to each other about the Ring of Power or Sauron or whatever. And they already know what's going on, but they're kind of confused that it's come back. So they cover stuff that they should already know, but explain it in a new way. So you can actually provide this dialogue in a way that makes sense. This whole movie, there should be a class about how not to write dialogue, because this is just heavy-handed forcing garbage to you. So from this, we know that there's spider people. Again, they walk very hard to not mention Spider-Man or Peter Parker in this whole movie. So you can actually have a drinking game that every time they go around it. So you're like, right.
Which is...
It's everywhere.
Which, to jump forward, is absolutely wild, because he is sort of in this movie.
He is, but they never mention him. They go to great lengths to not mention Peter Parker. Or Spider-Man.
Because Spider that would Peter. Cost money.
But they own it. That's what makes the less sense. So this movie came about because, as I said, Sony owned Spider-Man. They own all the Spider property. They own, as I said, they have the Venom, Morbius. It's Morbin time, obviously.
Of course, everyone in this room is looking forward to Kraven the Hunter.
Of course, Kraven the Hunter. So they own all these random parts of Spider-Man. So what's weird about this is they dance around it so much you swear they didn't. So I don't really understand why, other than my theory that there was a movie here and he had to like heavily remove big parts of it and then put it back together. So we're in the Amazon, right? They established that these spiders are super hard to find. Not 2 seconds later, she runs in and goes, I found a spider, right? So they've established that it's really, really hard to find. And then we get this.
I don't understand.
I've been searching for that spider for years.
No, we could help so many people.
Not interested in helping people. No one helped me when my family was starving.
So that's his motivation.
Their security guard betrayed them because he wants the magic spider.
Because nobody helped them. Which he goes back
there's
to.
No, yeah, there's no explanation
no,
for the rest of
no. it. No, he's just evil.
He speaks entirely in dub.
Okay, so we'll get to that in a second, right? But, so, do you guys remember his name?
I don't.
Sims, right? So that's his name. But you can just call him Evil. Because that's all he is.
I'd like to point out for the record that Keith watched it yesterday.
He watched it yesterday.
And does not remember this man's name.
No. So we don't need to. His motivation and his character arc is evil. That's it. He just does random stuff in this film that makes no sense, other than he's an evil protagonist or an evil antagonist to our protagonist, right? So from there, he shoots the pregnant woman, and she is then kidnapped slash saved by the spider people who live in the trees.
And speak with Midwestern accents in perfect English.
And are wearing just... Imagine a Halloween shop Spider-Man costume.
Yes.
Imagine you run that through the dryer consecutively for 10 hours. That's a bit what they look like.
But what's funny is, it's like, it's not even the full Spider-Man costume. It's like the webbing.
Yeah.
The webbing is there. So they put her in, like, for want of a better word, a Lazarus pool. I don't know if you guys know Lazarus pool. Which isn't in Spider-Man comic books, but for some reason it's just here. And it doesn't save her. So there's no reason for her to go in there other than to get bitten by the spider. And she dies, but somehow gives birth to Madame Web. Cassandra Web?
Spiders.
Cassie, yeah.
Cassie Web, Cassandra Web. And we just think that's the end of it. But no, we have a smash cut then to 2003. Wanda Parker there.
How did a newborn baby get from the middle of the Amazon with magic spider people back to New York City with nobody mentioning anything? That not being news.
Also, she gets back with all of her mother's research, despite your man stealing it.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. So there are certain things in this movie where you just have to call out, how did this even happen in the movie logic? This is the first one. There's two big ones. So, and a boat involved travel. This one where it's like, right, she somehow managed not only get to New York, but she is able to get into the foster system randomly. Never explained again. So the spider people not only have access to travel, understand US customs and border control, but then also how to get into the foster system.
They understand tropes enough to leave the baby in a wicker basket at the orphanage.
But they speak with a Midwest accent, so they're probably fine.
Yeah.
Right, so then we have a smash cut to 2003. They make it very clear it's 2003, right? For no reason. If you guys can kind of guess why, or tell me why, love to know. Makes no sense to me. But it is 2003, they make it very clear.
It's so it lines up with Spider-Man, which they have erased from this movie. Peter Parker being born.
Yeah. They're trying to tie it into either. This is the first, like, theory to kind of craft up what happened to this movie. They're either trying to tie it into the current Spider-Man verse, which, you know, obviously...
As in Tom Holland.
Yeah. Tom Holland and all, because, okay, you know, Spider-Verse, anything can happen.
Right, right.
So that's why, so that you have a Spider-Man who is, you know, coming to the end of, like, high school at, like, 2020-ish.
Right, yeah. Okay. That makes sense. But no, it doesn't make sense. It really doesn't. But the thing about it is, it's like, they go to great lengths to not have a Spider-Man in this. And if it is a Spider-Verse, they can just have one show up. They already have one based in 2003, which is the original Spider-Man with
Tobey Maguire.
So it's like, they didn't need to do that. But I don't know. So 2003, Cassie Webb now is a paramedic who hates people, right? So she picked a job where she wants to help people but absolutely cannot stand people. So figure that out, right? It starts off, she's in the back... Ben Parker, who's also Ben, I like to think of him as Ben from Parks and Recreation, where like he just fell on hard times and has to do this. It's more fun that way. But he's back trying to save someone's life, and she's just making fun as this woman is dying in the back. And she's driving like a crazy woman, and you're like, whoa, okay. So paramedic who doesn't hate people makes fun of the whole thing the whole time. And then when you do eventually save the woman in the back, the kid comes up and she just cannot handle people.
She's so disinterested.
So disinterested.
They hand her like a personal drawing from the kid, and she's like, what do I do with this?
What do I do with this?
She's like, it's cardboard. Yeah. Do I put it in my pocket?
I don't want to fold it up. What's...
So do you think like the performance here of Dakota Johnson is just earnest that she knows she's in this, or do you think that's just her acting range?
I think that's just her.
I like to have faith in her that she's just got a bad run of roles. I have good faith that she is a decent actress that has just had bad direction consistently.
It's funny because like she's one of the only people in this movie that isn't overdubbed. There's a lot of ADR in this movie. So if you guys don't know what ADR is, that's when they will shoot something and either the sound will be bad or they'll change it in some way to make sure that like they can put in what they want. And it's, the more ADR in a movie, the worse it is. I don't know why that's the case. It just kind of happens when they're walking away and you'll hear them say something or whatever. So also, she's the only one that isn't ADR'd in this.
Just as a minor just script doctor point I noticed as well. It is several minutes after we see her before they even mention in passing that her name is Cassandra and she's the main character. But they make it abundantly clear from the jump that man is Ben Parker.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, they need you to know that is Ben Parker. That is Uncle Ben. Doesn't matter what the main character name is. That is Uncle Ben.
Did you notice as well at this point that like they also drop a cut? So there's lots of like little jokes and Easter eggs here to be like, you know. And one is, have you never been shot in Queens? He gets shot in Queens. That's where he gets mugged and starts the whole Spider-Man thing. So Cassandra Webb is actually dropping these hints throughout the movie that her best friend at this point is going to die brutally. And this is the first time where you're like,
sure,
come on.
Like, even when, spoilers, she dies for a second.
She does.
She falls in the Oldsmobile, which is famously Ben Parker's car because Sam Raimi.
Sam Raimi, yeah, that's actually a good spot. So we are only 5 minutes into this film. And we're already trying to unpack this. So from there, as you said, she's like, oh, what are you going to do? It's then established that Ben Parker's sister is pregnant. And we all know who she's pregnant with. Peter Parker, Spider-Man. And Cassandra Webb goes through great lengths to not actually do anything social with these people. She just actively does not want to hang out with her friends at all.
I think it's her name. The sister's name is Mary.
Yes.
It's his fiance's sister. So it's May's sister, whose name is Mary.
We haven't met May yet.
May is not in this movie.
No, May is just hinted that she's there. She's like, oh, I've met someone. And that's there. Did you think it was interesting that they spent like five minutes in this movie talking about fortune cookies? Blank fortune cookies?
Yeah, and there are so many like just little shitty jokes about like how she can see the future. Even what you're saying where she's alluding to Ben Parker dying. Yeah. Like there's all these like ideas of like she's prophetic anyway.
Yeah.
But then
when that's because of the spider bite. So they didn't make it clear. She got her powers immediately after her mother was bitten in the Lazarus pill, right? That's when she had her powers. But they weren't woken up until she dies for like a second. So we get to that in a moment. But on the way from saving your woman to the hospital, they intersect with our three female teenage characters, right? Who aren't played by teenagers. They're played by, one is Sydney Sweeney, who's like, what, 28? 24, 28. She's very old. She's very old anyway, old to be play a teenager. And she's in loads of movies that, you know, like...
Oh, she's in several movies right now playing a grown-ass.
Exactly. Playing like... She's actually really good too.
Yeah, she's fantastic. She's really good. They give her nothing.
They give her nothing in this. They give her nothing to work with, right? So, I've seen this movie 6 times. I cannot remember any of their names.
Oh, no.
No, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. To start on this, there is no reason that the three of these needed to be three characters.
No.
There is no distinction between these three teenage girls that could not have been filled by one person.
All I know about Sydney Sweeney is that she does taekwondo.
Oh, yeah.
Because she calls it out, and that's just random and out of nowhere, and she wants to be a Girl Scout. That's it. And have that clip somewhere, but we'll get to it. So basically, these three are set up two different ways. So their motivation is, the first one, she's Mexican, and her dad was deported. That's her motivation. And she likes math and science. Then there's another one whose parents live in China and won't come home for some reason.
Because they don't love business.
Her. I don't know. Because business, but also they don't love her. And the parents, they look plastic or something.
And yeah, as we all know, business and child neglect go hand in hand.
Of course.
Yeah. It is known.
And then Sydney Sweeney's character, so the girl who was saved was her new mom, basically. And her dad, who married her, is just pure neglect. So these three girls are completely in different forms of neglect throughout the film. And they're just kind of there, right? That's it. So it's not established any more than that. There's no more established than that, right? So what happens is they go back. They all go to separate for a little while. Madam Webb is off, actually. Hold on one second. Broke my own rule there. Is off. Saving people she hates. One of which is in a car accident. And the editing in this is horrendous, right? Basically, she goes in and cuts the person out. But then the way it's edited, it looks like she was already in the car from the other side.
There's a basic film principle rule called the rule of 180.
Yes.
Where, for the most part, unless you're really pushing the boundaries, which this movie simply isn't, try to keep things within 180 degrees of the camera's focus. So that it makes it feel not more natural, things aren't quite as jarring, and you don't end up with instances like this where it looks like Madame Webb is pulling herself out of a car.
That's what like. There's a bit, this scene again, when you go back and watch it, which you should, it looks like she has not only got into the car, but is saving herself from the car. Which, again, has to be a reshoot.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Has to be. There has to be some kind of reshoot in this, because it's like, you're not going to make that mistake. But the editing in this, again, is just horrendous. Like, atrociously bad. So, this, she ends up falling into the pool there, into the Hudson, and dies for, like,
3 minutes,
something like that. And then she's pulled out by Ben Parker. And we get our first flash of precog. Basically, the way they show that she's able to foresee the future is they just show you the same scene. Again and again, and at different points.
Now, here's, for the record, I was watching a digital copy of this. I genuinely was not sure if my copy was corrupted and just the scenes were skipping. That's how bad the editing is.
Yeah,
that's how jarring thing. I thought I had a bum copy of this movie.
No.
That happened to me. I was watching, I rented it on YouTube and I thought the video was desyncing, but it was just bad editing and bad ADR.
No, I saw
all over it.
I saw it in IMAX and it was equally as bad. Like, the whole thing was just absolutely horrendous. So this is the next clip. So basically, after we get that, she gets her precog, and then we're reintroduced to our villain. So our villain is the same guy who shot Mother Webb. And Mother Webb, I love that term. And basically, he's now a millionaire for some reason. We think what happened was he used the spider money. Spider Venom to make money, thus Spider Money.
Spider Venom plus
blank
1999 economy equals profit.
Spider Money, exactly. Spider Money. So he's now a super millionaire, lives in the most evil
villain
penthouse ever. He has like random spiders in there, and then basically has his own visions. So he's been having these visions of these three girls killing them in the future. They don't explain it's the future. They don't explain what's going on. The only reason why we know it's the future is because he has longer, bushier, shaggier, grayer hair.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it. The girls look the same. They don't look any older, but we're supposed to believe that they're older.
But again, that's because they're played by 25-year-old women.
Exactly. They just look the same.
They also use technology to somehow get their faces from his dreams and then de-age them so he knows what they look like.
So you've jumped
ahead.
They
look the exact
same. So this is the next clip, right? So he sleeps with a CIA NSA agent to steal super early 2000 hacking technology, right? That can somehow not only spy on every bit of technology that we have, but also pull images from dreams. And here's what's said.
I didn't know we'd be targeting teenagers.
They're teenagers now, but in the future, they have powers, and they will try to destroy me. I came from nothing, less than nothing. I will not give up everything I've built and have my life cut short.
Right, so again, his motivation is he came from nothing, less than nothing, and he will not be killed. The woman that he hires, his like girl in the chair, which is a very like 2003 trope as well.
Is someone sitting there watching security?
Exactly, footage. Sending off information to him. She didn't know that they were targeting teenagers. So she took a job to kill kids and was just never explained.
Oh yeah, perfectly fine murdering normal random innocent people for this spider murderer.
Yeah.
Draws the line to children.
Yes.
And it never explains what's in it for her.
No.
She's just...
Well, no, that's not true. That's not true. She is explained later on that she's getting paid, very well paid.
Very well paid.
Yeah, yeah. So that's how it's put in this, where it's just like, I'm paying you lots of money, go and do it, right? So, but there's no further, like in a good film, or in one of these films that we'd see where we have a guy in a chair, there's usually some kind of personal connection. There's some kind of like vendetta or even an established character. This movie takes liberties with the Spider-Man property so much that like, she doesn't even have a name. I don't even think she's called anything.
She is just an employee. I don't think she's part of the union.
I don't think she's part of anything. She's just there. But yeah, so this technology is able to spy on every bit of technology that we have. And it's so well protected, quote unquote, that he's able to sleep with this woman, steal her password, and that's it. The account is active the whole time. You try to log into a Facebook that isn't yours, and you're going to get a bunch of different.
Yeah, so he poisons her by holding
her. Dara, 2003.
Still, still, all I'm saying is it's like there's no failsafe at the government level. This is experimental government tech, and there's no failsafe.
The Patriot Act is just coming in.
Well, that's a good point too. Hold on to that thought for a second. But yeah, so here, so far we know here's the powers that he has that's been established. They never really go through all the powers he has, but we just kind of pick them up. If he touches you, he injects with spider venom that can just stop your heart, right? So that's what we got so far. Okay, so from there,
To the fireworks factory.
We go to the fireworks factory. So there's I can't remember the term of it in movies when something's shown and it has to be done.
Chekhov's gun.
Chekhov's gun, thank you. So it's the same in wrestling as well, it's the same thing. If a table comes out, someone's gonna go through that table.
It's usually the person who opens
the table. Who opens the table, yeah. And in any movie, if someone presents a gun or a weapon or anything,
has to go through that.
Exactly.
It's gonna be in the wrestling match that is Madame Web, the fireworks factory is a table.
Correct.
Great. On board. I got it.
So for no reason, they explain that this fireworks factory is a death trap and it's about to blow up. And this is where her boss dies?
Yes.
Question mark?
I think it was her boss, yeah.
Yep. So her boss dies it's not funny when people die, but this was funny. where she's like, no, don't go there. And then gets creamed. And that's her reason to run away or to go to the funeral. They don't really explain what it is because there is a funeral that she's supposed to go to, but she doesn't want to. And she randomly ends up in Grand Central Station.
This is their excuse for why is this woman not at work all the time?
Yes. She just randomly starts to just run around New York. So that's in and of itself, right? But so she's at Grand Central Station.
I would like one quick moment before she goes to Grand Central Station.
Okay.
This woman is watching A Christmas Carol in the middle of summer.
That was psychotic.
It's the movie's way of kind of like subtly big air quotes hinting at the idea of like changing your future. But they could have done it easier than having a woman watch Christmas Carol in the middle of summer.
Like, it's straight out of Life is Strange. Like with the bad, like, it feels like all the dialogue in this feels like it was written in French or something.
Yeah, and then translated
over. And to some sort, she literally says something like, you can't change the future. Bird hits her window. She goes over, looks at it. Flashback. Here's the same line of dialogue. Opens the window. Saves it. And she's like, I'm not saving anything, and goes to Grand Central Station.
You know what it's like, though? Like, I think one of the reasons why this movie appeals to me so much, it's kind of like The Room. Have you guys seen The Room? Tommy Wiseau? Yeah. One guy. Awesome. So, go watch The Room with friends and have a good time. Because it's very much the same as this. I think this is like the modern, not Room, which is the really sad, upsetting one. The Room with Tommy Wiseau. I've made that mistake before. So they are very different things.
If you see Brie Larson, you're taking the wrong exit.
Yeah, no, wrong exit. You want, yeah. You know, if you start seeing people in suits playing football, you're in the right place. So yeah, this is kind of like the modern Room, and I think that's why I like it so much because I haven't really seen a film that is actively bad, is actively just terrible, but in a completely rewatchable way.
And yeah, and it seems like the whole movie thing. It is fascinating how bad it is. Like,
yeah.
The whole time you're watching, you're going like, how did this end up there? And you're coming up with theories like us and like, oh, there's parts clearly pulled out of this. They wanted to separate it from the established canon.
Yeah.
Because how did this get made?
Well, look, the thing about it is when you're watching Morbius, it was great. The memes were better than the film. And I've seen Morbius like twice. And I couldn't watch it again because it's hilarious up until it's not. This movie is captivating. Like, we're not even halfway through it yet, and we're already just...
It's 2 hours, and it feels like 20 minutes.
Yeah, because you're just hockeying through it. But when The Room was made, that was, like, the benchmark of cinematic disaster pieces, where it's, like, this was actively, in every conceivable way, a failure. Madame Web is very much the same, but I think for different reasons. There's an earnestness with The Room that isn't with Madame Web, but they somehow managed to make it happen. And you can hear it with the ADR is the big one. The audio, the syncing, where you're watching it. And I saw it in IMAX. And I was just like, this sounds like the film is broken. Sounds like it's broken. And then, you know, when these guys are watching it, they thought their copy was malformed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it wasn't, you know? Okay, so from there, we then meet our three girls again, who are all on this train. Now, what I love about this part is, so again, it's supposed to be 2003. Sony insist in putting their own products in there. Some guy is playing a PSP. Now, PSP came out in
2004.
So the technology that they shoehorn in didn't exist in 2003.
No, that one gets a pass.
It doesn't.
That one gets a pass. Any mention of the PSP, fine by me.
Okay, I'll give you that one. But it is quite funny that they show it very clearly, and it's just not. So that was funny. But so we get, this is the first time where we get the same scene extended, where like she sees the bad Spider-Man kill the girls in different ways like six times. Now here's one thing that you may not have noticed, because it took me my third watch to notice. So Sims, the bad Spider-Man, doesn't wear shoes except when he's dressed as Spider-Man.
Also,
did you notice that?
No.
I did clock that he was bare feet a lot of the time.
No, he's barefoot.
Is this a Frank Miller?
I don't know. No, he's barefoot the whole time. So when he's wearing a suit, barefoot. The only time he's not barefoot is when he changes into Spider-Man costume and then wears booties.
See, it's actually like the perfect disguise, because no one will know it's him then.
But here's the thing, like the whole point of him not wearing shoes is so he can stick to walls and stuff. So it actually, he's removing his own abilities by wearing gloves and booties. Doesn't make any sense.
But also, in the Vision, when he's going to kill the three girls, he's just in a suit on public transport, yeah, where his cameras everywhere, yeah, going to murder these things.
Yeah.
Once they get off, suddenly he's Spider-Man. He's in a suit, he's in disguise.
So he's able to change, when you're watching this again, he's able to change from guy in suit to evil Spider-Man.
Lickety split.
Like, instantly. Instantly, like, it will cut away and he's back. And it's like, okay, I had to hand it to him. That's super quick. Also, does anyone know why he decided to dress like Spider-Man?
It seemed appropriate.
Yeah, but why?
Marketing?
Also, here's one, right? So if this is part of the Spider-Man universe, where Jonah Jameson hates him, right? This is another theory I have. The reason why Jonah Jameson hates Spider-Man so much is because maybe he thinks it's the same guy. This serial killer who went around and killed a bunch of cops, chased these girls, etc., went on a rampage in New York.
Well, no,
and
then another guy shows up. You're forgetting. Normal people can't see the evil Spider-Man.
Nobody can see him.
Because no one looks up.
No, it was established. Nobody could see him, and that's why they thought Madame Web was trying to kidnap these girls.
Yeah, but because he's crawling on the roof. He's never on floor level.
I thought he had a power where people just, Like water on rubber, just it like glided over their mind.
Oh, let's do a poll. What do you guys think? Do you think that they couldn't see him, or they didn't look up? Hands up if you think they couldn't see him.
Yeah.
Okay, two, three. Hands up if you think they just never looked up. Okay, so the room agrees that they just couldn't see him.
Okay.
People of New York aren't like pigs where they can't look up at a 45 degree angle.
Look, a lot of weird stuff happens in New York. I was literally there 2 days ago. And I don't know. Maybe. So, anyway, so he kills a bunch of people, and then Madame Web kidnaps these girls. And there's an APB put out on her where they're like, this girl has kidnapped these three teenagers. Watch out for her.
Seconds. Yeah. They turn a corner, and a random police officer is like, you kidnapped these girls.
Which makes it even more funny, because like, she then steals a cab. The most blatant, obvious.
Several registrations.
Registration. Yeah, it's not like she stole a car where, you know, you could track it. These are limited. It's a New York yellow cab that she just steals and then drives out of the city. We get one of the best. Sorry, go on.
Within just another point of time dilation that's absolutely wild. Within hours, her kidnapping these women is front page news.
It's also, how many times does she drive in this movie? It says several times she actually says, "Can I drive?" This movie is her driving.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's a superpower. like stunt driver. So we get some, like, so they end up going to the woods. So that's the safest place to drop a bunch of teenage girls into the woods, and we get some more character development from the teenage girls. Here's some of it.
And at this point, you could just cut off and watch it in the woods.
Yeah.
Anybody else starving? All I have is gum. Here, take it.
She found this in the glove compartment. Wait, that bag's already been open. We don't know how long it's been in there. Okay, I hope you're good at, catching squirrels. Okay, so, what's the deal with the ceiling guy?
I told you, I don't know. I've never seen him before.
How did you know he was coming?
Oh my god.
I'm kind of more interested in why he's trying to kill us.
So that's how the acting is. Even when they're being hunted for their lives, they're still just being like sassy to each other. And again, the only bit of character development we get about one of the girls is that one is really hungry all the time.
Yeah.
That's her character. Throughout the whole movie. From there, then we have Cassandra Webb. While being here's the craziest part. So I don't know if you guys remember 9/11, pre-9/11, what it was like. Do you? Yeah. So going to America was a completely different experience before 9/11 to afterwards. You could pretty much just go and it was fine, right? So again, this I don't understand why they had to put this in 2003, where the highest security alert in history, basically, in America was around that time period. This woman is being hunted by everybody for murder.
In New York
City. In New York City, is able to go from New York to Peru, no problem.
About half an hour.
And in half an hour. She just disappears and reappears like it's no problem.
Well, no, the implication there is that this is a non-9/11 world.
It's New York's. No, it's New York City. And also, the towers aren't there.
We just weren't looking at them.
No.
We didn't look up.
No, so, I mean, that's the craziest part for me of this whole movie, where I'm like, no one stopped her, no one arrested. And also, she went through airports where it's cameras everywhere. The guy has technology that he can tap into everything. And no one spotted her boarding the plane. No one spotted her going to, like, Wendy's. No one expected her getting a Starbucks. You know.
But he was able to find the three girls in some diner.
In his dream.
No, but in some random diner.
No, to be fair, they established that. They do explain that. We'll get that in a second, though. So she disappears off and discovers that, yeah, she was bitten by a spider and your man knew she'd always come back. Now, this is the same guy who was with the Midwestern accent in the spider costume. Now he just dresses normally.
The Peru trip is later.
It's fine. It doesn't matter.
It establishes the same thing.
It establishes the same thing. So, yeah, from there then we have the girls disappear and they go off to the diner, right?
Yeah.
They go off to the diner. So the girls are hungry. And instead of laying low, they go off to this diner. And that's when some guy who's reading the Daily Bugle, because it's important to remember, Spider-Man, he's like, oh, the girls are there. Now, here's the question I have. So they're obviously out of the city, so they're probably in upstate New York or other way down to Jersey, right? They don't establish Swiss one. A random trucker is reading the Daily Bugle, which was printed the same day. So I don't know if you guys know about newspapers, but they don't run that fast. You know, they're a little bit faster. There's two editions, but so he's reading that and rings in the call, and then that's how Sims know they're there.
Front page news.
Front page news. Three girls missing in New York City, where a lot of people go missing. So then we get a really, really crazy sequence to Toxic. So the Britney Spears song Toxic, which this is another thing. That song wasn't released in 2003. The album was released in 2003. The song was released in 2004. They chose to have this in 2003. But I think Britney Spears' label was on Sony, wasn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah. So there's a dance sequence where all the girls are dancing and having a good time. Sims comes in, brutally kills them all. That was a vision. Madame Web comes in then, and this is the first case where we get attempted vehicular manslaughter, where she just drives the car through the diner.
No. Truly, this woman has no sense of, like, suddenly she is not trying to hide the fact that she's not trying to hide anything about her situation.
No.
Her superpower is car.
Is car, yeah. So, they have then, like, a mind meeting where she comes back and talks to Sims through the Force. I'm just going to call it the Force because I don't know what it is. Where she then is like, oh, I have powers to be able to beat you with my mind. And then we have the birth of Peter Parker, which they don't explain. So she has to go back to Peru then, and she just disappears, leave the girls with Ben and his sister, who's insanely pregnant.
No, his new girlfriend's sister.
His new girlfriend's sister, who's also insanely pregnant, and her water literally breaks. Now here's the thing, and again, I'm going to ask the room, your friend, yourself, your fiance, your sister, whatever, is pregnant on the way to the hospital. You have these three girls who have been hunted by a murderer. What are you going to do? A, leave the girls there, go to the hospital yourself. Or B, take the girls with you and get hunted by a serial killer. What are we doing? A or B? Just shout it.
A. Also, again, to point out, Ben Parker is a paramedic.
Yes.
Oh, yes. He knows better.
There's a non-zero chance he should be able to deliver that baby.
That's true. There was no reason to take her to hospital.
He is awfully squeamish about the fact that this woman is giving birth. This cannot be the first time he's dealt with a pregnant woman giving birth.
That's true. It's literally his job. Okay, that's too funny. Yeah, so basically they take the girls with them, and then it's established that the only reason, like, there's two or three times when he nearly kills them all in the car, and then it's established, oh, if they just leave the girls there, he won't go after them. But that's the set of Madame Webb's epic return, where she drives through one of the screens in Times Square, which, to be fair, you can do. There's a parking lot right there, so that does make sense. But you can drive through it, and he jumps into it. That's the bit that makes no sense. So, again, she's driving through the big screen in Times Square to hit him, and he jumps up into it. Don't know why you do that.
Because he's stronger than Carr.
He wasn't, though.
He thinks he is.
That's fair.
I'd also like to roll back to the Peru trip, because that's supposed to be the emotional climax of the movie.
Right.
That is her confronting, like, her mother.
Yes, yes.
And, like, and kind of really getting the explanation on her, like, precognitive powers.
Right.
Now, that entire scene is drenched in this idea of her hating her mother for the situation she was left in.
Thanks, Mom. I hope the spider's worth it.
Thanks, Mom. I hope the spider's worth it. That was never established. That, like, she screams into the Lazarus pool, "I hate you, Mom." Like, no, at no point did she mention the fact that she disliked her mom.
No. Well, no. She, like that.
The music is swelling. She realizes that she was saved by the spider people. She forgives her mother. We didn't know she hated her.
No. The only setup you get is that she reads the diary of her mom, which, again, you think she would have done either a bunch or never, and it's randomly never established that she just doesn't. But yeah, so we get the payoff in that, you are right, where we realise that the reason her mom was hunting the spiders was because she has a degenerative condition that would have killed the child. But again, she's incredibly pregnant and went and did this. You think that she would have thought about this beforehand, or, I don't know, stuff happens, but it's just kind of weird, you know?
And the whole time, like, at the beginning, it's obviously that her mom is fed up with being pregnant in the Amazon.
Yes.
Like, she's always acting up when I'm trying to do stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of, like, pregnancy in this movie. Like, inconvenient pregnancy, for want of a better word, where it's just strange. I don't know why they went that way. They just did. So, we get a big action scene where this all leads to, where it all comes together.
We're back at the fireworks factory.
So,
yay!
So you can't say you don't get a payoff in this movie. A lot of it makes no sense, but they make sure to go to the fireworks factory. So look,
and she has a foolproof plan locked in. She knows exactly how to beat this man, Ezekiel Sims, and his weird spider powers.
With a Pepsi sign.
Set fire to the fireworks factory.
So they establish that this fireworks factory is condemned, and it is going to just fall down.
It is still full of fireworks.
Still full of fireworks. So they didn't remove it. So they set fire to all of it, and they're all going off in random ways and this kind of stuff. But her precog ability is so good that she's able to just force walk away through it. Able to predict we're all coming, stop them, do some cool stuff. And there are some good scenes in this. It's not terribly bad. And you get the whole, oh, you're showing off. No, showing off a little bit right now. That's kind of fun. So this movie, as a climax, isn't too bad. Where it falls apart is she calls in a helicopter, and the helicopter blows up. So she had the precog ability to know that if she called that in, they're going to die. So four families now have been affected for no reason. And those people are dead. But if we didn't get that, we wouldn't get the setup to the Pepsi logo. So there's this massive Pepsi sign. It's huge. It's about the size of this hall. And it's real, because I saw it like 2 days ago and I couldn't believe it. I freaked out in the taxi. I was like, oh my God, there it is. So it's a real thing on the harbour in New York. But the real reason it's there is because this was sponsored by Pepsi.
We love product placement.
So much product placement in this movie. And so what happens is they climb the sign. And Ezekiel Sims is killed by, I think it's a big S. So he's killed by a big S. And then he's dead. But the real setup is Madame Web is not only crippled but blinded.
Underwater. By the
powers. So I don't know about you guys, but being hit by the sign, I can understand it. But she falls into water and somehow that cripples her. And then she gets blinded by the fireworks. So the fireworks blind her, so that makes some sort of sense. But I don't know why she was crippled.
To be fair, unless you fall into water, like, surface tension on water can be a real son of a...
But she didn't fall that far, it was only like 2 stories into water.
You fall 2 stories on anything, you're going to have a bad time.
That's true. But, I mean, it's a bit of a push.
We're going to go up to this library, I'm going to toss you 2 stories off, and we're going to see how do well you do.
Into a body of water. Fair enough. But anyway, so she does die again. So she dies twice in this film, and she's saved by the Maldium CPR. Which, I mean, fair enough, they did set it up in the film. And then we get a hard cut back to the end of the movie where it's the only time, except for the flashbacks, that we actually get to see them in their costumes. So if you watch the trailer, you think you're going to get a superhero action movie.
This movie promised
Spider-Women.
Promised several Spider-Women doing cool action stuff in cool costumes. Accumulatively, maybe a minute of footage in the movie is them doing that.
Yeah, if even.
And most of it's the same footage shown again.
From a different angle.
Yeah.
But, so you see, the only person you see suited up here is Madame Web, and she's here wearing these glasses, which I don't know why that shot is so funny, but it really is, like, it's the worst glasses ever.
It's the smirk. I love the smirk. That's, you know what? That's Dakota Johnson having fun with it.
It is. So, we get, like, quote of the movie, which is here, I think.
Somehow release an acute neurotoxin.
No, here it is. Hold on.
What should I say? I can see better than I ever have.
Oh yeah? Can you see us in the future?
Yes. I can see you.
Then it cuts to her talking about what they're going to do, and then that music that's in the new Karate Kid, you know, the one from the 90s.
Oh yeah, no, I'd like to put my final note on this movie was Hell Yeah, Dreams by the Cranberries.
Yes, wonderful. And that's the movie. We did it, guys. Well done, us. So yeah, look, as I said, there are certain. We will go to questions down in a second.
Cycle back, I want to get a pitch in the room here. As we said, those of you who haven't seen this movie, do you feel you have a better understanding of what this movie was? Hands up. No. Because I think we did the best we could.
Look, I mean, there's three-hour documentaries on YouTube about this movie, so I'm not the only one that's obsessed with this. And I think it's just because it's so weird. Even talking through in the venue with this or on the podcast like that, you still don't really get how weird it is. And I think it's because it has that room feel to it where it's like there were mistakes made here, or this was either an act of like purpose insanity. Like the director of this movie, I thought was just a complete
hack.
Yeah, complete hack or charlatan or whatever. Turns out, no, she's actually really good. She's made a bunch of really good TV. And like I just think this is let down by editing, completely let down by editing and story, and just hanging on to bare minimum story threads.
Well, again, to kind of tie it back, the grand theory, and I think like this does tie in with a lot of the Sony particular Spider-Man stuff, is that they're trying to tie it all together. They're still clout chasing the MCU and a greater cinematic universe.
Yes,
but they're doing surely the poorest job at it, because there's this, you know, the introduction of Peter Parker as a fetus.
Peter Fetus. Or Fetus Peter.
Spider Fetus. There was... Because we got... What movie ended with Michael Keaton's Vulture?
Oh, that was Morbius.
Yeah.
That was Morbius.
Yeah.
And they threw that in. Obviously, we got Venom cameoing into the Spider-Verse and then immediately getting shut back out. I was thoroughly disappointed by, because I will... Say what you will about any of the Sony Spider-Man movies, the Venom movies are a treat.
Here's what's interesting, though. There's no post-credit sequence. Everybody, every time I was there, there were people sitting there waiting for the post-credit sequence that never happened. So I think they realized that this movie was dead on arrival. That they knew they weren't going to be able to tie it to anything. And what's weird is in the comics, has anyone ever read the Madame Web comics? No? You can actually get the first edition for €30 on Amazon, on eBay. That's how popular they are. Basically, she's not in the comics per se. She's just kind of like the overseer, or will like annoy Peter Parker with some kind of thing in the future, or set up Battle World and in Secret Wars and all that kind of stuff. So she doesn't really do much. So I don't really know what they were expecting here to happen, because she's not really an agent. She has no agency. She is just kind of like, well, we can change certain things, but you still have to do Faith. And what's funny about this movie is she still ends up blind. She still ends up crippled, even though she knew that was going to happen. And I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to say, well, look, this is her faith, and her new mission is to guide these spider women. Which makes it even more crazy, because they don't do a post-credit sequence. They don't set up anything else. There's an argument made that there could be three more movies from this with each of the spider women. Where do you go?
Somebody somewhere in the production of this movie really had faith that this could be the start of something big.
It could have been. I think this probably was. Like, there was a better movie here, and this was just the result of studio meddling and re-editing. Has to be. Like, I mean, the actor who plays Ezekiel Sims is not a bad actor. He's actually been in some really good things. Yes, sir.
Have you looked into who wrote the script? Oh, are they still in Hollywood?
It's the same guy who wrote Morbius. Same guy who wrote Morbius. So, I mean, look, but even then, the director has made some fantastic...
Oh, that's what I'm saying, is like, a lot of it could be script.
It could have been, but like on that point, why is there so much ADR? Like, the actual, I think you can only put the original script problems on Madame Web herself and anything that was shot in camera. The biggest red flags for me are the editing and the fact that every single line of Ezekiel Sims, in costume and out of costume, has been redone. Entirely.
Are you asking for the Snyder Cut of this one?
You want the Snyder Cut? I'd want that too. The biggest question is, do you think that exists? Do you think there's enough footage to do that?
There probably is, I would say. I mean, I don't have flash covers and stuff.
Okay.
I would say that if it's chopped up that much with ADR...
That's why I think from the beginning I was like, there is a better movie here. That's why it's fascinating. I'd love to see... I'd love to see a movie or a Snyder Cut like this where there is a better movie saved from the fire or whatever it was.
Yeah, and there
5 minutes. Okay, so we have 5 minutes left. So questions on this, because I'm going to open it up to the floor. So anyone have questions on this? On it? Or points? Topics? No? Do you want to jump back in? Are you good?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right. Well, look, we'll leave it there. Fast points on this. So do you appreciate this movie more, Keith, after seeing it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I didn't see any of the discussion before, except for I thought maybe the whole it being that bad was a marketing ploy to get more people to see it. But then when I actually watched it, I was like, oh, this is fascinating. Like, fascinatingly bad. Didn't know what was happening the whole way through. And it always felt like it was leading to something, but nothing ever happened.
Yeah.
Okay. Appreciates a big word. I think it's definitely a movie that you could have fun with a group of friends. Like The Room, you could have fun with it with a group of friends, absolutely ripping it apart like we are here. If I was not doing a podcast, I simply would not watch this movie.
No, that's right. Yeah, and look, I would say if you haven't seen this movie, go back and watch it. If you have seen it, go back and watch it again, but watch it with friends in a party situation. I think you have a good time. The Room, if you haven't seen that as well, I think this panel will make a lot more sense, because The Room is that kind of party movie. Guys, we've been Nerd2Know Media. If you want to follow us, you can. Social media is the best way to do it, nerd2knowmedia.com. We do a podcast every single week on the radio. If you want to come up and get cards, we have cards as well, but we're very easy to find, nerd2knowmedia.com. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Alright, so you're listening to the podcast, you're like, hey, I'm not in Ireland, how do I get in touch? Well, TuneIn has you covered. That's how you can check us out live when we're on the radio. You go to TuneIn and download the app, or you can check out the live streams on nerd2knowmedia.com or Phoenix 92.5 FM. If you want to get in contact with us, it's very easy. Nerd2Know Media everywhere. Nerd2Know Media on Twitter. Nerd2Know Media Instagram. Nerd2Know Media on Twitch. Nerd2Know Media@gmail.com if you want to reach out via email. Hope to hear from you soon. Check out the Wrestling Rewind here on Phoenix 92.5 FM every Tuesday at 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. and of course over on nerdtoknowmedia.com, the only wrestling podcast by wrestling fans who don't hate wrestling. We'll see you then.
Hey Dara, what are you doing over there in Ireland, like with the freaking leprechauns and everything? That's not cool. You should be over here with the God Players. At least then you could, like, I don't know, pretend like you got, I don't know, some kind of thing going on. Yeah, with you give me a Brooklyn Rage. Yeah, Dara. Why ain't you over here with Joey? Anyway, we missed you, dude. So, this is Phil Caribo saying,
I love it. Thank you for listening to a Nerd to Know Media production.